Welcome to Grass Talk Radio. This show is for people who play bluegrass music and anybody who might want to.
The prison guard shut the iron door behind me.
Howdy, howdy, folks, and welcome back to Grass Talk Radio. I have been busy as a beaver this week, and this episode is the result of what I've been doing. In the last episode, Jackson, my son, read an email from Henry, and Henry asked the question, more or less, what banjo albums would you suggest I listen to? And you guys heard Henry playing. He's already playing pretty well, and he's probably already listened to all sort of banjo players. And I said, in the next episode, I'll recommend some banjo records that I think you should listen to. Well, I get started trying to assemble this little list of what would I suggest that any banjo player who is learning would want to listen to or ought to listen to, that sort of thing. I've had this exact discussion with many, many of my own banjo students. Anyway, it became a Herculean task to decide, because here's the basic problem. I probably have, if you talk about banjo players in particular, probably on the order of 300 to 500 records and CDs. And how do you decide? What would I recommend? So I got to thinking, well, what have I told my students in the past? So in this episode, I am going to talk about a couple of particular albums. And I don't mean to say that they are in any way scientifically proven to be the albums that every banjo player ought to listen to. No. But these are the ones that motivated me and many other people, I think. Certainly the early ones that I'm going to talk about have influenced many, many players. So this is going to be kind of crazy because I have the album sitting over here and I have little sound samples that I have recorded. I set my turntable up out in the overhang of our barn stable, and transferred the songs over to digital, the ones that I thought represented certain things and whatever. So I've got all those tracks, and I'm recording what I'm saying right now, and when I get done, I have to edit all this thing together, and this is taking a while. It's pretty easy to just come in here and hit record and start yakking, you know, and 40 minutes later hit stop, and there are 15 steps to get it up where you can listen to the podcast, but this one takes longer. Anytime I'm using sound samples is a lot more time intensive. Anyway, so I'm going to do that. That is the point of this episode, to recommend what you might say must listen records for people who are learning to play banjo. Now, all of you people who play other instruments beside the banjo, I think you'll get something out of this too, because if you play bluegrass, you're going to be around banjo players. So being knowledgeable about banjo players, even if you're a mandolin player, is a good thing. And you'll hear lots of other great instrumentalists as we go through these sound samples. And speaking of sound samples, let me make my legal disclaimer that the material you will hear in this episode, I am claiming fair use for educational purposes and to provide commentary on these recordings. So any of you lawyers, just give up. Besides, if you sued me, you're not going to get anything. You might get the donkeys or, you know, a certain number of eggs per week or something like that. But if you're thinking you're going to cash in, it's not going to work. So we're going to go through those. Before I get to the heart of the episode, for Henry in particular, I want to say that I'm skipping in this episode the reading of one or two of those favor emails, and simply because the episode is complicated enough, and secondarily because Jackson, who has been my email reader lately, is busy at the moment and he's doing schoolwork at home. So he's busy right now and can't record some additional ones. So we'll come back to that in the next episode. I'll be reading some more of those favor emails to introduce the listeners to each other. So you could consider this episode to be an extension of the last episode, The Question from Henry. So let's talk banjo. This episode is about bluegrass banjo playing. It is not about clawhammer banjo playing, and you probably know that I love playing clawhammer too, and I like that sort of stuff. But I'm not talking clawhammer in this episode. I'm talking three-finger picking in the bluegrass style. And we're going to take a little trip as we listen to these albums that I have selected, which, by the way, there were certain albums that I was looking for in my collection that I could not find. And over the years, more times than I can count, I have sent a record or a CD or something home with a student and never saw the thing again. So if any of you out there listening used to take lessons from me, because I would forget who I gave it to, and then I didn't want to hassle them and go, hey, what'd you do with that record I gave you? You know, because maybe they gave it back. Maybe I loaned it again to somebody else. I've handed out a many a record to people, or CDs in the later years. But if you're one of my former students and you happen to have my copy of the Tony Trischka Banjo Lands album, maybe you could send it back. Oh, and also, if you're one of my former students who happens to have, speaking of Tony Trischka, my copy of Melodic Banjo by Tony Trischka, because I forget who I gave it to, but I gave it to somebody, and they said they'd send it back, but they never did. Anyway, okay, enough of that house cleaning. The big three banjo players in bluegrass music are Earl Scruggs, Don Reno, and Ralph Stanley. In my opinion, they are the big three. And you could even say that Ralph is second generation, almost. I mean, he was playing banjo. All these guys were playing banjo at the same time. Earl, born in 1924. Reno, born in 1927. Stanley, born in 1927. And they were all playing, but Earl influenced all of them. He probably influenced Ralph Stanley more than he did Don Reno, but no doubt they were all influencing each other. And two of those guys, Earl Scruggs and Don Reno, both back-to-back played in Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys, what you'd call the first bluegrass band. Earl got the gig because Don Reno got drafted and went in the Army. And then when Earl left Monroe, Reno was hired and replaced him. And then over on the side, we had Stanley Brothers doing their thing and Ralph Stanley. Now, I'm just going to tell you that this episode today is primarily about Scruggs. Not really about Scruggs, but about the thread and the influences that Scruggs has imprinted in the bluegrass world. And let me say this too. In no way am I saying that... Let's put it this way. I don't mean to diss Bill Monroe by... I'm not going to talk about Bill Monroe other than I just mentioned him. But we're just talking banjo picking here, so... The fact that I'm not mentioning Bill Monroe in every other sentence doesn't mean that I don't personally recognize him. It means I do personally recognize him as the creator of bluegrass music with 1,000 other people influencing it. So, all right, enough about that so I don't get emails about it and stuff. Scruggs, Reno, and Stanley. Of those three, personally, Scruggs, I just liked his picking better. Reno, it was very complicated and kind of hip and kind of weird, too. And, you know, if you go the Don Reno route, you hear the banjo. Some of what you hear, especially in his soloing, sounds very guitar-centric. It's almost like I'm thinking guitar, but I'm playing banjo. And he was a great guitar player, too. And I don't know, really, really cool stuff. But what moved me was Scruggs. I mean, the Scruggsy straight-ahead timing and that sort of thing. With Stanley, the reason, I mean, I've got tons of Ralph Stanley records, and I love them, and I've loved the Stanley Brothers, but for me, I always like the singing and the songs and things like that. As far as Ralph Stanley's banjo playing, while it is fantastic, it didn't move me the way Earl did, you know? There was something about the tone of Earl, the tone and the timing of Earl, and I think, like I said, 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 banjo players have agreed with this and went, man, if I could just sound like Earl, you know? So we're going to examine first Earl Scruggs. He's the dude. And I've talked about, you know, when I met Earl and various things. I'm not going to go into any kind of stories because we kind of have to get through this. This is going to be very complicated. So the first banjo album that I would recommend that any person who is playing three-finger bluegrass-style banjo, known as Scruggs style, every one of those people should own a copy of Foggy Mountain Banjo. Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs and the Foggy Mountain Boys, and the album title is Foggy Mountain Banjo. I'm holding it in my hand. This one is on Columbia. I suspect, I don't know. A lot of this stuff has been reissued in many, many, many different forms. So you may have a different record that has some of these recordings, same exact recordings on it. But I'm holding here, this is Columbia CS8364. So there we go. And let me just, well, let's just hear it. Let's hear a little bit of Earl playing Lonesome Road Blues. Hit it. I mean, he's nailing it, and he is defining the style. He really is defining the style right there. And if you have that album, and by the way, I know you can go to YouTube and you can listen to it, but I really, really recommend, Henry, that you save up and you get yourself an actual copy of the LP, the actual album. You can hold it in your hand and flip it around and read it and look at it. The real record. And if you don't have a turntable, you can go on Amazon and buy a turntable for $75 and one of these little, I don't know, Crosley little record player things. You should hear this stuff the way practically every banjo player in the second half of the 20th century, the way they listen to this stuff with the scratches and the skips. And the side one and side two, I think that experience is good to get a feel for the history, you might say. Get yourself a copy of the actual record. You know, just listening to it on YouTube, I don't know. Anyway, on Foggy Mountain Banjo, that's the first album. I mean, Earl is the dude, and he made the style. And it says on the back, the original, quote, Scruggs style, unquote, banjo picket. And let me just rattle off some of the tunes, some of the other tunes that you're going to hear on this record. Ground Speed. It's in Earl's book if you want to learn, you know, the tabs in there. Home Sweet Home. That's in Earl's book. Sally Ann. Little Darling Pal of Mine. Reuben. Cripple Creek. Lonesome Road Blues. We just heard a little bit of that. John Henry. Fireball Mail. Sally Goodwin. And I'm always tickled that on all the Earl Scruggs versions, it always said Sally Goodwin. G-O-O-D-W-I-N. And most everybody else says Sally Gooden. G-O-O-D-I-N or E-N. But anyway, Earl, I guess, had it in his head that it was Sally Goodwin. Bugle Call Rag. You gotta hear that. Cumberland Gap. I mean, everybody tries to play those tunes when they're learning, and you're not going to get a better version than the guy that made it up. You know, he didn't make up these songs. And I'm sort of happy that this particular record is not filled up with all the stuff like, you know, the stuff we all hear all the time and try to play Foggy Mountain Breakdown, Flint Hill Special, Earl's Breakdown, you know, stuff like that. You should also listen to those as well. Okay, that's the first album, Foggy Mountain Banjo. It's a must listen. All right. Now, my second album is also Earl Scruggs. You know, I was going to pick five records, and I realized Earl is so important, I'm going to give him two right at the beginning. And I got a whole bunch of Earl Scruggs records. I've got, oh man, I don't know how many. Flat and Scruggs, compilations, old reissues, Earl Scruggs review records. I think I have all of them, all of those. And you know, when I was starting out, of course, I was eating up with the banjo and wanting to be a, you know, a Scruggs style banjo player. Of course, I was listening to Tony Trischka and, you know, all that weird stuff too, because I was learning in the 70s. I was listening to Alan Mundy and, you know, a whole bunch of people. Courtney Johnson, fellers like that. But at that time, you could go see Earl play, but it was with the Earl Scruggs Review, and I would go to these shows, sitting at the Southeast Music Hall in Atlanta, watch Earl Scruggs and the Earl Scruggs Review, and always, always, always come away going, man, I want to hear Earl in a bluegrass context. I don't want to hear him with a drummer and with, you know, his kids flamming away on their Dylan-esque style songs and stuff. I mean, the thing was, the audience would be half full of Scruggs fans, and they just wanted to hear the bluegrass thing. Now, at the time, when I was going to see the Earl Scruggs Review, usually Josh Graves would be in the band and Vassar Clements. So that would be the three guys over there that could really knock out some bluegrass. And then you'd have, you know, Scruggs kids and I forget who played drums. I think it was Jody Mafus, I think. Anyway, so the Scruggs boys, what I'm saying is they would go through a version of something like Reuben. And it was Earl picking Reuben, but it wasn't like in the bluegrass context. So it just didn't knock me out like the record that I had at home, you know. And I'm sure many bluegrass banjo pickers in the 70s feel the same way I do about that. Everybody just wanted to hear him play it in a bluegrass context, and it just wasn't happening. Now, later on, he did a few things later in that way. Anyway, second Earl Scruggs album. It's, of course, a Flat and Scruggs album. And this is kind of crazy because it is the record that I'm holding in my hand is on Pickwick. So Pickwick, I think, was a discount label of Columbia or something like that. Because the record, when I pull it out, well, it says Pickwick on it. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Anyway, it's Pickwick International. And the number is, let's see here, JS6093-A. That's the album that I'm talking about. You're going to hear a little off of it. Look, and it says on here, previously released on Mercury. So these are older recordings re-released on Pickwick. All right. Let's just listen to Earl Pick. This is it right here. Here we go. Rolling My Sweet Baby's Arms. Now, the reason I chose this second album with that Roll of My Sweet Baby's Arms is I think it is essential for a banjo student to not focus entirely on the instrumentals. Because if you listen to the Foggy Mountain Banjo album, it's all instrumental. And so you don't get as much of, well, how does a banjo work in a vocal, you know, in a song context where somebody sings a verse and a chorus. And so in an album like, I didn't give you the title. The album title is Foggy Mountain Breakdown. That's that Pickwick record. Flat and Scruggs, Foggy Mountain Breakdown. With an album like this, 3/4 or more of the songs are vocals. Lester Flatt and the guys singing bluegrass songs. So you get to hear what Earl does backing up vocalists. And that is very, very important for anyone's growth as a bluegrass banjo player. You know, it doesn't matter how great you can play ground speed. If you can't play, how about Little Girl of Mine in Tennessee? Earl is playing his solos, but he's also playing backup. And he's playing fills and, you know, and also allowing the other members of the band to do their thing too. So it's more band focused. In the Foggy Mountain Banjo record, it's like you take a break, you take a break, you take a break, I'll take a break, you take a break, you take a break, like that. But there's no singing going on. So let's just, to finish up with Earl here, let's hear a little bit of Earl and Flat and Scruggs and the band playing Little Girl of Mine in Tennessee.
Tennessee, love's the sweetest girl that was ever in this world. Down
sea, and all she went there for me. Tongue there, sail down, let him go free town.
But let him go to my little sea.
Okay. That's enough, Earl, to get you started. And Earl got practically every bluegrass banjo player in the world started, if you think about it. I don't know if he knew he was doing that at the time, but he did. But I don't want to neglect these other banjo players. And let me just mention a few of them. I'm actually looking in a book called Masters of the Five-String Banjo. And in addition to these particular records that I'm talking about in this episode, Henry, and all of you other banjo pickers, I also heartily recommend that you find yourself a copy of Masters of the Five-String Banjo in Their Own Words and Music by Tony Tereshka and Pete Wernick. The book was out of print for a while, and then it came back in, and if you look around, you'll find it. There's a list in there of 68 banjo players that they interviewed. And I'm not going to read the whole list, but I want to mention just a few of these that I personally found to be... you cannot say they're as important as Earl, but you can say they have influenced a lot of people and they've made a lot of great music. And just let me rattle off some names of some of these banjo players. And my record collection is full of records by these guys. And gals. It's not just only guys. I already mentioned Earl, Don Reno, Ralph Stanley. I'm skipping some of them that I'm not as familiar with. But Don Stover. I may have one or two records of Don Stover. Roy Clark. I actually have some Roy Clark albums. I've got an album called Pair of Fives with Roy Clark and Buck Trent playing. It's not the kind of thing you want to listen to every day. But it's interesting. Don Parmley, who, you know, Bluegrass Cardinals. If you listen to Bluegrass Cardinals, you're going to hear him. And I heard, I mean, this may not be true. I don't know if this is just a rumor. But I heard that Don Parmley played the majority of the little banjo fills and little doodads on the Beverly Hillbillies. You know, like when they're walking from the entrance way into the billiard room and a little banjo picking was heard. I heard that Don Parmley did those. I don't know. And I heard he also did guitar stuff for him. I don't know if that's true or not. A few other banjo players that just are worth mentioning because the ones I'm going through today aren't the only ones. There are plenty more. And you have to consider people like Alan Shelton, Doug Dillard of the Dillards. You got to go listen to the early Dillard stuff. I'm not going to play any of that stuff now. Bobby Thompson, many times credited on records as Robert Thompson, and many times not credited at all. But, you know, if you've heard the Hee-Haw theme, you've heard Bobby Thompson's endless... he's just a fantastic banjo player, but he really could run those melodics. J.D. Crow, we're getting to J.D. Crow in a minute. Sonny Osborne, you cannot leave the Osborne brothers and Sonny Osborne. John Hartford, you know. Bill Emerson, Eddie Adcock. You know, I think of Adcock as sort of like an extension of Don Reno in a way. Ben Eldridge. Of Seldom Seen, and so on, you know. Critters, old man. People like Vic Jordan, I'm turning the pages here in the book. Raymond Fairchild, you know. Oh, man. You have to at least hear the man pick. What I'm saying is, it may take you listening to 200 records before you really begin to get it all, you know. Courtney Johnson, Bill Keith. Each one of these people I could do an hour-long episode and play samples of and all the things they did. And these are the people that I'm mentioning now that I just set aside in favor of the ones that I'm going through today. And we've already done Earl. Little Roy Lewis. I've got a bunch of Little Roy Lewis records, and I've seen him play many times. Played on stage. He's played with us on stage. You know, he likes to get out there with the other bands, you know, when they're in the middle of something, and come out wearing a crazy costume and stuff. And we've done that a few times. I won't tell those stories now. John Hickman, Herb Peterson. I'm kind of skipping John McEwen there, although I do like his playing. Alan Mundy, Lynn Morris, Trishka, Tony Trishka, you know. Certainly influenced a lot of people in the 70s with those books, and certainly influenced Bela. Butch Robbins, we'll get to him in a minute. Bob Black, I love Bob Black's playing. Who else we got in here? Dave Evans, Pat Cloud, Murphy Henry, Jimmy Arnold, Kenny Ingram, Terry Bauckham, Carl Jackson, one of my favorite banjo records, which I'm not going to feature today, is called Carl Jackson Banjo Player. Wonderful. And there was a tab book published that for that book, for that record, which I gave. I met this guy one time from Argentina. He showed up at a jam session in somewhere down south of Griffin, Georgia, like one of these little pick and barn places. And this dude showed up and he said he's from Argentina and he had a banjo with him. And I said, well, hey, you know, he was sitting there holding it. Play something. Well, I don't really... And he spoke with a heavy accent. I don't really know, you know, much bluegrass. That's why I'm here. I want to, you know, learn about bluegrass. I said, well, do you play? And he proceeded to play some Bach on the banjo. We all just sat there dumbfounded with our jaws hanging open, going, man, and this guy was good. I can't remember his name right now. I'll think of it later and tell you. Amazing guy. We got to talking. And before I left that jam session, I gave him my copy of the tab for Carl Jackson, Banjo Player. I was like, you need to check out this guy, this melodic stuff. Anyway, he may still have that book. There are so many. I could, Kenny Ingram, who played with Lester Flatt in the Nashville Grass, you know, after Earl split and went off with his boys. Kenny was, oh man, great banjo player, excellent. Bill Evans, Bela Fleck, we'll get to him in a minute. Allison Brown, I mean, this just goes on and on and on. All right, enough about, I'm just trying to let you know that I'm not single-minded in my worshiping of these banjo players that I'm talking about today. Plenty of other banjo players that I like their stuff too. All right, let us move on to the next 3x5 index card. We have finished with Earl for the time being, but you never really finish with Earl because the second generation banjo players who came along, such as J.D. Crow, were heavily influenced by Earl Scruggs. And let's just start this record here. It's a great record. Jimmy Martin and the Sunny Mountain Boys, Good and Country. Martin is something. He is something else. Oh, what a great singer. He can deliver a song. He might have been half nuts, I'll give you that. But he poured out some great bluegrass music. And on this record, this is MCA record, MCA 81, formerly DL74016, so it must have been out on Decca, and this is a re-release. Yeah, it was a Decca record, but the copy I have was re-released on MCA. Jimmy Martin and the Sunny Mountain Boys, with everybody's favorite banjo player, J.D. Crow, playing banjo. So let's begin, and I think this is so often the case with a banjo player, is... you want to prove that you've done your homework and you've got the Earl stuff nailed. So I'm going to skip ahead to track 3 of side 2, where JD plays Cripple Creek. And of course, you can go listen to Earl play Cripple Creek. And every banjo student in the world has learned it or is in the process of learning it. And I think it's a way of demonstrating that you've put your time in. You know, that you understand Earl. So here is J.D. Crow playing Cripple Creek. Now we're going to move on to another tune off that same album, Good and Country. And it's got a bunch of stuff. It even has an original banjo tune on there called Bear Tracks, which you got to listen to the whole album to hear JD doing his thing in all these various contexts. But we're going to go with, this is the most bizarre lick on the banjo. This is the kind of thing that happens to all musicians at times, and I think it afflicted JD. JD made up this cool lick and started out the tune, and I think he just couldn't stop playing it. It was so much fun to mess around with that lick idea that there is this lick, and you're about to hear it in Hole What You Got. Here we go. Jimmy Martin and the Sunny Mountain Boys with JD Crow playing Hole What You Got.
What you got, and I don't mean baby, been a thinking about you, and I'm on my way. Don't sell the house and don't wreck the car, stay there honey right where you are. Oh, what you got, I'm a coming home, stay. Well, in my mind I can see that's a pretty good sign that I need you, and that's why I can't wait to get back home. So squeeze yourself real good and tight. I'll be there before daylight. If you'll hold what you got, I'm coming home to stay. Hold what you got, I'm coming home, baby. Hold what you got, and I don't mean maybe. Been a-thinking about you, and I'm on my way. Don't sell the house and don't wreck the car. Stay there, honey, right where you are. Hold what you got, I'm coming home to stay.
That is a cool, possibly overused, lick. That's just my opinion, of course. Very cool. But what you see in JD is JD trying to stretch out and create some new sounds and to establish, you know, the JD Crow sound. So while we're on JD, because he is without a doubt one of my favorite banjo players, and one of the reasons I like JD Crow stuff even more, like if I'm going to put an album on, I'm more likely to put on something with JD on it than I am with Earl. And the reason is because it's sort of like the, well, number one, the recording quality got better over time. So you could listen to better sounding stereo recordings with, you know, good mic. You know, the recording quality got better by the time JD formed the New South and everything that came after it, all the way into the Bluegrass Album Band records and all those things. I'm not going to play any of those, but you should listen to them. You got to listen to JD, but he's always referencing Earl. I mean, he's not cloning Earl. He has got his own thing going. And the album, if I was like in prison and they allowed me one record, this would be the record. I have to say, it's a toss-up. It'd be on. I have a couple other candidates, but this record, Rounder Records, 0044, I'm pretty sure it is. Yep, 0044. I got the first printing with the crazy picture on the front, which they replaced later, known as The Bird. J.D. Crowe and the New South. And so many things came out of this. You got J.D. Crowe on banjo, Tony Rice guitar, Ricky Skaggs mandolin, fiddle, etc. Bobby Sloan on bass, and Jerry Douglas, which they used to call him Flux all the time. I don't think anybody calls him Flux anymore. Maybe just his close friends. This is a great band, and I'm going to start with one that says a lot about J.D. Crowe and how he's evolving. We're going to begin with track 3. I'm not going to play the whole thing. Track 3. Oh, I love this song, too. One of my favorite songs. In the Bluegrass Realm. And it's only in the Bluegrass Realm because J.D. Crowe and the New South put it on 0044. That's the only reason any bluegrass players even know of this song. Rock, Salt, and Nails. And I was fooled. See, I heard Rock, Salt, and Nails, and you hear the kickoff and you think Tony Rice. It's not Tony. And let this be a lesson to you banjo players. It's J.D. Crowe playing the guitar. I didn't know that for years and years. And then I saw a YouTube video and the song kicks off. And I'll be darned. It's J.D. playing guitar with finger picks. Excellent guitar player. So that all that stuff, I thought, wow, how is Rice doing that? It wasn't Rice. It was J.D. So let's listen to the intro and a little bit of Rock, Salt, and Nails.
On the banks of the river, where the willows hang down, and the wild birds all warble with a low morning sound. Down in the hollow, where the waters run cold, it was there I first listened to the lies that you told. Now I lie on my bed and I see your sweet face.
Now, I think one of the things that's cool about that song, in addition to the surprise that it's J.D. playing the guitar kickoff and fills and stuff, is that I think it indicates a wise idea that banjo players should keep in mind, is it's not every song needs a bunch of banjo. And clearly that one didn't. And J.D. was cool with just playing guitar on it, you know? And so if you just eat up with the banjo, sometimes just remember, sometimes the best thing you can play for a particular song is nothing. Literally nothing. And this sort of leads into, see, this album came out before Manzanita. The album Manzanita does not have a banjo on it. One of the greatest sort of modern bluegrass records of all time is Manzanita. Many people will tell you that. I'm not alone in that belief, and there's no banjo on it. And I would have liked to have heard some banjo, but anyway. So that's the lesson, and J.D. gets the lesson. Sometimes you don't really need to tear it up on the banjo on every song. But let's hear him do it anyway. So let's hear a little bit of, we're going to hear him play Sally Gooden. And it's really cool that these different albums, let me find my little note card over here. One of the things that I like about this selection that I picked out for Henry is that you can hear the same song done by multiple people if you have this little stack of 5 or 6 albums. Like you can hear Earl play Cripple Creek, you can hear J.D. play Cripple Creek, and you can hear Butch Robbins, we're getting to Butch in a minute, all play their versions of Cripple Creek. Dear Old Dixie, you're going to hear two different people play Daryl Dixie and Sally Gooden. You're going to hear two different. And Cumberland Gap, you're going to hear two different. If you got all these albums and you compare them and you see, you can really determine, like, what has J.D. Crow contributed to the banjo when you listen back to back to Earl's version of Cripple Creek and then you listen to his version, J.D.'s version of Cripple Creek, or Sally Gooden and so on. Because everybody's trying to put their little thing in it. Or maybe they're not trying, but everybody is going to put their little thing in it. And we're going to hear, this will be the last J.D. Crow tune, and just we're going to hear just part of it, because this tune reminds me so much of the way jam session playing takes place, where, you know, in the record industry and certainly radio, it's rare to find a song much more than 3 minutes in length. And this thing just goes on and on. I don't have the record. It's actually still out on my turntable. I was going to look at, see how long it went, but it's a very long version, worthy of a jam session in the woods at Bean Blossom, jamming on Sally Gooden. So let's hear it. Sally Gooden, J.D. Crow of the New South, off Rounder 0044. We are going to another favorite banjo player of mine, and I saw this guy. He's still around. He puts stuff on Banjo Hangout every now and then. Very interesting guy, Butch Robbins. Butch had his hippie phases, and he had his bluegrass boy phases, and all sort of phases. He's an expert in phases. This record here, again on Rounder, thank God for Rounder Records. And they actually are rounder than the other records I own. They're considerably more round. Rounder Records, 0130. Butch Robbins, The Fifth Child. It's a great record. He has another great record on Rounder too, by the way, called 40 Years Late. But I picked this one out, The Fifth Child. And I didn't tell you who was on those Earl Scruggs records. And I did mention who was on the New South stuff, but let me tell you who is on this, The Fifth Child. Alan O'Brien, guitar and vocals. Blaine Sprouse on fiddle. Blaine Sprouse, super good fiddle player. Definitely out of the, you know, really smooth and kind of out of the Baker thought processes. Randy Davis on bass. Sam Bush on mandolin. Terry Smith on bass on a couple of tracks. And good old Bobby Osborne singing tenor. So this record, the reason I like this one is, again, he states with many of the tunes on here, I have a good understanding of Scruggs and what and how bluegrass banjo fits into the bluegrass band form. For example, he plays Cumberland Gap on here. He plays Cripple Creek on here. He plays Dear Old Dixie. He plays bluegrass breakdown. So, that, I mean, he's stating it, but he also puts his own twist on it. And I consider him to be the quintessential second. There's so many banjo players that have played with Bill Monroe. It starts with Earl, and then you got Don Reno, and you got Rudy Lyle, and it just goes on and on and on. Sonny Osborne played with Bill. So many good banjo players played with Bill. But Butch hung in there for a good long while, and I think really made a huge effort to try to understand, you know, what Monroe was trying to do. And I saw Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys several times with Butch Robbins on banjo. And, you know, you're sitting out there, you're looking up at they got the white shirts and ties and hats on, and you're like, man, I would love to do that. You know, that was sort of the feeling of any banjo player that would be in the audience. And Butch was doing it. Let's begin with a cut off of this record and just listen to it. He gets it. Butch gets it. And I think of this record too, and sort of being the revival of the Nashville, well, I don't know about the revival, but the beginnings of a lot of things that happened out of Nashville in the bluegrass world. You know, out of this, what you're hearing, you know, sprung the Bluegrass Band and the Nashville Bluegrass Band and a lot of other things, because you'd see these same people popping up on other records and in other configurations and groups. But let's begin with really just a good burning tune, I'll Be on That Good Road Someday.
Same old train's gonna come back again and rattle my blues away. Now, darling, you can't love one. Darling, you can't love two. Now, darling, you can't love three or four and still say my love belongs to you. I'll be on that good road someday. I'll be on that good road someday. That same old train's gonna come back again and rattle my blues away. I've counted all the lonely nights. I've counted the stars in the sky. Now goodbye. I'll be on that good road someday. I'll be on that good road someday. That same old train's gonna come back again and rattle my blues away. Of a dove, I'd be on my way back home. For I am bound to a false-hearted love till I wish I was living alone. I'll be on that good road someday. I'll be on that good road someday. That same old train's gonna come back again and rattle my blues away.
Man, I would love to play the whole record for you. I'd like to play all these complete records for you, but you're going to need to go out and buy it. Go buy the record. I'll bet you anything you can order this on CD from Butch Robbins' website. I'll just bet you can. And you probably ought to instead of just sitting there watching on YouTube. Okay? So one more Butch Robbins, In My Father's Footsteps. A very different tune. You got a kind of a claw hammer rhythmic feel in a bluegrass three-finger style. It's pretty cool. This is In My Father's Footsteps. Now, I love Butch Robbins playing so much. Let's just hear the tail end of Bluegrass Breakdown. And then, just to round it out, just a little bit of Blue Ridge Cabin Home. Oh, we've all played that in a jam session, haven't we? Have we played it like this?
In those Blue Ridge hills far away. Oh, I love those hills of old Virginia. From those Blue Ridge hills I did roam. When I die, won't you bury me on the mountain, far away near my Blue Ridge mountain home. Wander back to the ramshackle shack in those Blue Ridge hills far away. My mother and dad, they lay back to rest. They are sleeping in peace together there. Oh, I love those hills of old Virginia. From those Blue Ridge hills I did roam. When I die, won't you bury me on the mountain, far away near my Blue Ridge mountain home.
All right, again, I recommend you buy it. It's Rounder 0130, Butch Robbins. And, you know, you can look him up on Banjo Hangout. He comes on there and, you know, send him a little message or something. Or buy one of his records. All right, we're now moving to the last record that I recommend for Henry and for everybody else. There was a kid. Now, I did a similar thing. Go see J.D. Crowe playing in a bar. And sit in the front row and just study him and watch him and study him and watch him. Well, there's another guy that did the very same thing. And if you listen to other podcasts, you've recently heard these tales. Yeah, there was a kid. Sat in the front row soaking up all that J.D. Crowe picking up there in Kentucky at the Holiday Inn, which I talked about staying at the Holiday Inn there and mom and dad going down to the bar and stuff. That was a long time ago I told that story. Anyway, this kid, he knows good banjo picking, and he needs to soak up some JD, so he sits in the front row night after night after night, probably making JD really nervous, you know. But he blossomed onto the banjo scene and took it places far away. And I got to tell you, I'm a big fan of Bela Fleck. I am. But some of it just doesn't do it for me, you know. But it does it for him, and it does it for other people. I got the Flecktone stuff. I got the Edgar Meyer stuff. I got everything. I got all of it. But what I always like best about Bela Fleck is hearing him play actual bluegrass. And, of course, he puts all his stuff in there. But I'm just, you know, what can I say? I like bluegrass, and I like that format. Doesn't mean I don't appreciate and enjoy these other things, but this particular record that I suggest, any modern bluegrass banjo player should have listened to all the other stuff I mentioned to, studied it deeply, but also should listen to this record, Bela Fleck Crossing the Tracks, Rounder 0121. Came out roughly the same time as Butch Robbins' The Fifth Child. Very close in time. Great record, but it really shows sort of the roots of this extension of bluegrass that has come along. When you hear some of these tracks, and I'm only going to play a couple little cuts, just little samples of it, but you will hear hardcore bluegrass picking with Bela's, you know, personal touch on it, no doubt, like Dear Old Dixie. Let's just start with that. Let's just hear a little bit of Dear Old Dixie. And I may just let this one play a little bit because I wanted you to hear the difference between, you know, the first and second breaks. Because first time, I really think he's stating, I got Earl's thing down. I got it. I get it. And so I'm going to prove that. Then I'm going to put in a bunch of other stuff. Now, I may fade out and come back in, but I want you to hear kind of like the acknowledgement break versus the, now let me show you what I thought up, you know, that kind of thing. So here we go. Here's some Dear Old Dixie, Bela Fleck off Crossing the Tracks. Now, what is interesting about this record is that as you're listening to some of these tracks, you begin to realize I'm listening to a jazz thing. I'm listening to jazz format. You play the head, you improvise, you play the head again, stuff like that. And then he'll come back around and play a old-timey fiddle tune, you know, with just banjo and fiddle. And it's like he's in multiple worlds on this one record. And I would love to play you the entire 7 minutes of this final song for this episode, but I'm not. I want you, if you're a banjo player, to get this record. Now, this to me is not the record to learn Dear Old Dixie. You go to Earl, like Fleck did. Go to JD, you know. Go to Butch. Butch Robbins got Dear Old Dixie on that same, on the fifth child. Listen to him too. And synthesize all these people. I think it's a mistake to start sort of at the end of the line. I think everybody should begin at the beginning, you know? Try to understand what has come before you. And I can hear that sometimes in certain banjo players. And not just banjo players. People that kind of start at the tail end of it. Like, you know, mandolin players whose first introduction to the mandolin was Chris Thiele. Or dobro player who, you know, only listens to Douglas, you know, instead of Josh. Or, you know, you get what I'm saying? I think it's wise to go back and try to understand where it all came from. And I think this album by Bela Fleck demonstrates that he has done that. And so if he's done it, it's worked out pretty good for him, you probably should do the same thing. Go back to Earl. Go back to JD. Go back to Butch Robbins and a ton of other banjo players who I'm skipping over in this thing. You know, maybe you're into the Stanley sound and all that and Don Reno. Do those things. But Fleck moves it forward. I'm just going to play you a bit of this thing because it's 7 minutes and it really reminds you of what was happening in dog music with, you know, the whole Grisman thing. And I hear touches of things that Tony Rice started doing with his space grass and all these sorts of things, which are now so hip and cool these days. And it's long. You know, nobody on the radio is going to play a 7 minute song. Anyway, let's go out with a little bit of Bela Fleck playing a Chick Corea tune called Spain. Oh, and by the way, I didn't mention that on that record, you're hearing Sam Bush on the fiddle. Russ Barenberg is that guitar player you're hearing. Bob Applebaum on mandolin. Kind of a lesser-known mandolin player, but very good mandolin player. And Mark Schatz on bass, and of course, Bela. And there are cuts on here with, you got some Pat Enright vocals. Jerry Douglas played dobro on a couple things, and a few other people, you know, so you just read the jacket. Anyway, Henry, I hope that this pointed you in some sort of direction, gave you some food for thought about who you might listen to and what you ought to do and that kind of thing. And for all of you instrument players of all the other instruments besides banjo, I hope you enjoyed hearing the other instruments playing along with these magnificent banjo players. So I'll talk to you guys in the next episode. Oh, and one more thing, I always do. I forgot to mention my website. You know, after all, the purpose of the podcast is to try to promote the website and the things that I sell. I completely forgot. My wife always says, I listened to your last episode, and the only thing is, you never mentioned your own website. So let me just really quickly do that, and then I'll say goodbye. Go to BradleyLaird.com. My website was down for two whole days. Just yesterday. Completely offline for two whole days, and it turns out that my hosting service built a new data center and was moving all their servers into the new data center, and they sent me an email and said, we're going to have some intermittent outages between 8 a.m. and noon on Saturday. It didn't come back up till Sunday afternoon. And man, was I crying the blues, thinking of all those people listening to Grass Talk Radio and hearing me plug BradleyLaird.com, and then they go to it and there's nothing there. I was getting kind of upset. Anyway, it all came back on, so it's working. So if you want to scope out my various instructional creations, free and premium, for all kind of stuff. Bluegrass banjo, mandolin, tons of mandolin stuff, videos, ebooks, courses. You banjo players, I highly recommend my book, The Flint Hill Scrolls. And when you download that book, it's in a digital format. I also include a video of a portion of a workshop, a banjo workshop that I participated in, and it was recorded by somebody else. And I give you that video, which goes hand in hand with what is one of the sections in the Flint Hill Scrolls. But since we're talking banjos, I highly recommend that you scope out that book. Get the Flint Hill Scrolls. Just the introduction, the first two pages, are worth the price of admission. All right, so now my wife will be happy that I didn't forget to mention the website. And also, real quick thanks to anybody who's purchased any of my products or has become a Patreon supporter. I hear you, and I appreciate you, and let me tell you, right now, it's really helping. So I do thank all you patrons over on Patreon, patreon.com/BradleyLaird. All right, got all that stuff out of the way, and now I'll talk to you in the next episode.